Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
To War Rocket Ajax. It's the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. I am not Mandalorian Chris Sims, and with me as always is not underscore Mandalorian Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. Yes, that is something that happened within the past week. If you listen to last week's show, we made some jokes about a Twitter account called Not Mandalorian, and then two different people made accounts with that handle. So, thanks, folks.
The power has gone directly to my head.
Oh yeah, we're mad with power now. We're gonna try to settle our egos down so we can have a really fun conversation.
You might. I'm not going to. I never have and never will.
Fair enough. But we're going to try to have a really fun conversation, and we will have a really fun conversation with our guests this week. They are Elliot Ray Hall and Daniel Kibblesmith. They are the writers of the brand new heavy metal sci-fi series, The Doorman, which is super fun. We're going to talk to them about it for a good long while, and it's going to be really fun to talk to them about it. I think we both really enjoyed the first issue of that series, Chris.
Definitely.
But before we get to that, we've got some business to so let's do that. Let's talk about Patreon for a second.
That's right, Matt. Let's take a pause for the cause and talk about all these fine folks who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and chipped in a couple of bucks every month to help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And folks, I gotta say, my New Year's resolution was to stay on track with the weekly episode art drawings that I've been doing, using art and drawing both very loosely. But ever since I had that death flu for 2 weeks, I have fallen behind. So I will be getting back on that. Matt, maybe we should change that to Chris will occasionally draw a picture.
I like to be aspirational and say that continue to say that it'll be every week.
Look, I fully intend to do it. I know that one of those weeks I'm just going to draw a box of NyQuil to indicate my own sickness.
Hey, that's
fine. I will catch up as soon as I can.
We do not actually have any new Patreon backers to thank this week, which amazingly, I think we have been doing Patreon. I think this might be somewhere in the neighborhood of our 60th week of Patreon. And it's the first time we haven't had any new backers. So I'd say that's a pretty good track record. So I'm just going to say a general thanks to everyone who is supporting us on Patreon. It is because of you that we can do Every Story Ever specials every month. We just put out the Every Story Ever special for February. We had several people on Twitter tell us that that is the podcast they look most forward to every month, which is extremely flattering. More ego boosting for the two of us. We get to do that kind of stuff. We get to do all kinds of special stuff for our Patreon supporters exclusively. We've got some stuff lined up for 2016. Once we get those taxes paid, everybody, taxes, am I right? We're going to start doing some cool stuff for our Patreon supporters. So stay tuned for that. If you would like to kick in a couple dollars to help us out and get some cool stuff in return, some bonus audio, art by Chris, art that we get quarterly from artists who help us out, all that stuff.
Ad-free episodes of the show.
That's right. That is a new thing we started doing. I was kind of keeping it on the DL, but I think we can reveal it now. I have started posting ad-free versions of the show on Patreon. So that is another perk that you can get by being a Patreon supporter. If you would like to do that, go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Help us out if you can. We would really appreciate it. All right, Chris, now that we've done that, let's do some checks and wrecks.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, what's going on with you this week?
Matt, con season is heating up. Con season has begun, man. It is. I think I'm in the middle of a 6 week stretch where I have a con or a trip almost like 5 weekends out of the six, which is great. I like doing cons. I like meeting people. I like talking to people. I love it when people come up and ask us about the show. I had a very nice young man come up to me and he wanted to pitch me some World Heavyweight Champions quotes, but that is over. That is done with. That is the past. And no one Patreoned us enough to keep it going. It's been really fun to do conventions with an X-Men book. I can tell you that. People like the X-Men. They like the X-Men a lot more than they like, say, Dracula or football mascots for some reason. I don't really know why. But that's been really cool. And one of the things that is also really cool is that coming up next month in March, we're going to have the paperback of X-Men 92 Volume 1 and X-Men 92 Volume 2, number 1, is going to be coming out at the end of the month. So that should make convention season pretty interesting, I think. I hope. I hope it makes it fun. I hope people like what they see from the new ongoing with Alti Fermancio doing the art. She's amazing. So big things coming with X-Men and me going around trying to get people's attention to make them buy X-Men comics from me. Matt, what are you up to?
Well, my check is something fairly similar, but I want to specifically pinpoint something because it's where we're going to be this coming weekend. Both you and I are going to be at the Sumter Comic Art Symposium in your hometown of Sumter, South Carolina.
That is correct.
We're going to be doing some panels there. My panel is going to be with Kyle Starks. We're going to be talking about Kickstarter. Chris, I assume you're doing a panel that's X-Men related.
Chad and I are doing a panel that is nominally about writing comics digitally. Since we have a little bit of experience doing web comics, a little bit of experience doing Marvel's Infinite comics, self-publishing to the web, stuff like that. But in all honesty, we will probably talk a lot about the X-Men.
Yeah. So we will be there. I will have all the stuff that I typically have at conventions. I also have supervillain handbooks, supervillain field manuals. I'll have Movie Fighters t-shirts, War Rocket Ajax t-shirts, Movie Fighters posters, stickers, keychains, all the stuff I normally have. I will also have quite a few trade paperback copies of Copernicus Jones Robot Detective. If you did not get in on that Kickstarter, for now at least, the only way to get that trade paperback is to see me at a con and buy it from me. Or see Kevin Warren, the artist of Copernicus Jones, at a con. Because we both have copies. Maybe at some point in the future, I will figure out a way to sell that book online. I kind of need to know that there's a little bit of a demand for it. So if you did not get on the Kickstarter and you would like to have a copy of Copernicus Jones Robot Detective to, you know, be able to buy it somewhere online, hit me up and let me know that. Tweet at me. Send me an email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. If I hear enough from that, I might figure out a way to do that. But for now, you got to come see me at a convention to do that. So this is one of the places you can do that.
And I have to say, the symposium itself is a really cool event. It is actually, it's not a convention. It is a symposium put on by the City Council and the Cultural Commission of Sumter, South Carolina, which wants to bring a little culture into a very small southern town. And one of the things they have decided to do is to get comics people. And I made the joke last year that Sumter was going to be the new Angoulême. And then it turns out that everyone hates Angoulême now.
That's true.
For good reason. So I think Sumter has a shot, man.
It's got a really interesting and really cool feel about it. It's like, there are a lot of people who show up at the symposium or showed up there last year who are not like big comics fans, but are really curious and just want to learn about it. I had several people come up to me last year and just say like, so what is this? What's your deal? I've never really read comics. What's this about? And it's really interesting and fun to talk to those people because they're not, it's not that they're closed-minded to comics. It's just that there's something that they never really thought of before as something to enjoy and be a fan of.
Because it's a city event and not really a con, it has a whole, like you said, it has a whole different feeling.
But I really enjoyed it. Everybody was so nice. It's a really kind of informal, laid back atmosphere there, and it's really fun. So if you're anywhere around, go see us there. It's a fun time. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week is going to be a podcast. Now, Matt, I believe you are familiar with Emergency Backup War Rocket Ajax co-host Kieran Shiak.
That is true.
And his podcast, Journey into Misery, which is where he explains, as he says in every episode, complicated comics characters and continuity to his girlfriend, Helena Hart. There is a podcast that is very similar to that. It's almost the exact same thing, except this is about wrestling. It's even two English people, even two British people. But it's Kevin Mann from the Attitude Era podcast, kind of guiding his girlfriend, who is a new wrestling fan, Joe Graham, through different wrestlers. It has started off last year, and they basically focus on doing 1 week is a current WWE guy, and then the next week they will go back and do someone else. So, like, I think their first proper episode was Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then they've done Samoa Joe, they've done Scott Steiner, they've done a lot of really cool stuff. There's an entire episode that's just on terminology, so Joe will know what he means when he says that he's going to work himself into a shoot. He's gonna work himself into a shoot and forget that it's a work. It's a very, very fun show. And the weird thing is, I love the Attitude Era podcast. It is my absolute favorite wrestling podcast. I think it's highly entertaining and highly informative. And this is kind of a side project that they've been doing, that at least Kevin Mann has been doing. And I didn't know about it at all until like last week. And it's been going for about 6 months, so I feel like I need to help get the word out, even though they were, I think, ranked number one in the American iTunes charts for sports. Like, they beat Stone Cold's podcast with a podcast talking about Stone Cold, which I thought was hilarious. So definitely, if you're the kind of person who doesn't absolutely hate the wrestling content here on War Rocket Ajax, then go check out the How to Wrestling, and that's the number two.
I was waiting for the title to pop up.
Oh, did I not say the title? Yeah, it's How to Wrestling. All one word. And so each episode, they'll tell you what the next episode's going to be, and people can chime in with their favorite matches, their favorite thoughts, and they'll, you know, the hashtag will be like How to Dudleys, How to Steiner, How to Hogan was one. So I would say definitely check that out. It's very entertaining and very personable. And again, like much like the Attitude Era podcast, it does not excuse anything from the sordid history of pro wrestling, but it also is about like celebrating it and enjoying it and what to show a new fan to get interested, which I think is a very cool approach. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation this week is also wrestling related, and this is something that everyone listening who has been a listener for a while and remembers us exchanging Christmas presents like 2 years ago will probably remember me getting from you for Christmas. It is the Death of WCW, the book. This is the anniversary edition of the book that was originally written in 2004, about how the company, WCW, collapsed. And Chris, we've talked on the show before about, you know, we grew up with WCW. We grew up in the South. If you're from the South, WCW was kind of your wrestling promotion. Your big wrestling company, if you grew up in the South at a certain time. And then WWF, like, you watched it sometimes, but I don't know. There was kind of a weird loyalty to WCW almost. So I've always had a fascination with WCW. And I've kind of slowly but surely been reading this book over the course of, you know, a couple years, just kind of piecemeal reading it. And then a couple weeks ago, you told me that you were finally, after we had discussed it for I don't know how long, watching the entire last year of WCW pay-per-views.
Yes.
We talked about that a couple episodes ago on this show. And that kind of got me going on, like, man, I got to finish that book. So I just sat down and I powered through the entire rest of the book. There's an introduction to that book that basically says, don't just read this book if you're a wrestling fan. This is not just a book for a wrestling fan. This is a book to learn about how a business failed. Like, this is, if you're just interested in business, read this book, because there's a lot in here about how a business failed. That is partially true, because there is a lot of interesting stuff about various bad decisions that were made in the final years of WCW. But really, it's about a lot of bad decisions that were made throughout the entire life of WCW, like from the day that Ted Turner bought the company, like bought out Jim Crockett Promotions and made it WCW. It was never really run that well. There was just a few really great ideas during a wrestling boom period that made it the most popular wrestling promotion in the country for a year and a half to 2 years.
Yeah, the book has a really interesting opening, and I think the first lines of the book, like the first words of the book, are WCW was never supposed to die. And yet you come away from that book, and these are not like WWE partisans like you'll get on the network where there's a lot of frequent revisionist history. Like, these are guys writing this book who seem to kind of hate WWE in a lot of ways, but you come away from that book exactly with that feeling, going like, oh no, the death of WCW was inevitable.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about like the last few chapters of that book, or at least the part that was written in 2014, the updated and revised part, is it digs into what happened to the WCW brand after WWE absorbed it, after Vince McMahon bought it, and how deeply and terribly WWE fucked up that whole thing, and how it had something great on its hands and fucked it up because of pride, because of ego, because of having to seem better than your competitor, even though the competitor is yours now. You own it. Right?
He had already won.
Yeah, he won, but he had to still make his company look better than this other company that didn't even exist anymore. Anyway, aside from some clear issues with the book itself, for one, it's riddled with typos. I cannot believe that a book, the 10th anniversary edition of a book that has been revised and expanded, is still loaded with typos. And yet it is. But aside from that kind of stuff, it is a fascinating read about a company closing down. It's also, like, you know, they say at the beginning, this is a book about a business failing. It is also a book so much about wrestling, because throughout different parts of that book, the authors will just go through the card of a pay-per-view and yeah, like match by match talk about what happened on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, the thing about how it's not a book for people who just like wrestling, like, that's kind of bullshit. And I say that as someone who really enjoyed that book, but it does expect a certain level of commitment to knowledge of the source material from you.
Well, it's almost written in this like winky way where you have to know what they're talking about, because there's certain passages in the book that are written with a sarcastic tone. And if you don't know anything about wrestling, you might think that the scaffold match that opened Starrcade 91 was really good. You don't know any better. You might not know that it was an absolute fiasco, which it was. Maybe that was Starrcade 93. I can't remember what year it was.
I think, but anyway, it was, if you're talking about the Skywalkers, I think it's a little earlier than that. I think it's 88 or 89.
No. This is not the one where Jim Cornette fell and almost busted his body to pieces.
Right. Okay.
This is, it had like Stunning Steve Austin and Bobby Eaton. That was the opening match of that Starrcade. It was like a a scaffold match. Anyway, it is a really fascinating and interesting book. If you have like a little bit of an interest in wrestling, if you have some knowledge of wrestling, and you have an interest in how this business that Ted Turner owned ended up dying, it's pretty great and well worth reading. I'm so glad that I just made the effort to just sit down and power through the rest of the book. All right, Chris, we've done some checks and recs, so let's talk about some comics.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I think we're going to kick it off with the comic that was easily the craziest comic of the week, Coming of the Superman number 1 by Neil Adams.
I mostly read this one because I didn't know Kieran Gillen was going to review it for Comics Alliance yet. And I was kind of looking around for, oh, is there anything in here that would be interesting to write about? I found out halfway through reading it that Kieran was reviewing it, and so I did not finish it.
It is so weird. I have a weird, like an almost like attraction to reading all these DC Neil Adams miniseries now, ever since Batman Odyssey, just to see what weird places he's going to go to. Because Chris, since you didn't get to the end, you didn't see Egyptian Darkseid.
I did see Egyptian Darkseid, and when I mentioned Egyptian Darkseid to Andrew Wheeler, he asked if I meant Apocalypse.
Yeah. The book
ends. Who is, in fact, Egyptian Darkseid?
The book ends with you finding out, with it being revealed, that Darkseid is responsible for the Sphinx and the pyramids. Because an alien messenger, who's kind of like a mantis-y version of the Watcher, takes Superman back in time and shows him this. It's bananas, and it's like one of many, many bananas things that happens in the comic, because the comic opens with Metropolis being attacked by Darkseid, Kalibak, and Parademons. Lois Lane is reporting about this on TV, like giving tons of exposition and explanation about this whole thing on TV, explaining who Darkseid is, explaining what a boom tube is, and giving like live narration of this disaster that's happening outside.
And explaining who Superman is.
Yes.
Also, don't forget that.
Three palette-swapped versions of Superman show up. And apparently they have arrived from Krypton. They show up and they start fighting, but they're not as good as Superman because I guess they're not used to their powers yet. So Superman has to leave. What country is it? It's somewhere in the Middle East.
It only says, if memory serves, it only says somewhere in the Middle East.
Oh, so it doesn't even say what country.
Right.
He has to leave the Middle East, where he's in the middle of saving a boy and a dog from just like being in the desert. But then he's like, oh, I can't take them because of laws. He might have a family. And then this weird messenger guy shows up and tells him, no, 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 take him with you. Take the boy and the dog with you. So Superman goes back to Metropolis, drops off the boy and the dog at the news studio where Lois and Jimmy are, then goes and secretly defeats the Parademons, where the other versions of him don't even notice that he did it. There's a panel where they're like,
glossed over the part where he leaves Jimmy Olsen in charge of a child.
That's true. He does do that. But like, he goes and defeats Darkseid and the Parademons and all this threat so quietly, I guess, that the other Supermen don't even notice that he did it. And he flies away behind their backs, and they just think they're responsible for it. So the only thing we really learn about these new Supermen who have shown up is that they're kind of dumb and unobservant. It is such a wild, weird comic. And I'm going to read the second one because I got to see what weird thing Neil Adams is going to do next.
It is a comic that, and again, I didn't finish it, but it is a comic that feels like, in the way that it's kind of, you know, that Kirby comics have that feeling where it feels like he started in the upper left corner and finished the page in the lower right corner, and there was, you know, no pre-writing, no sketching, just penciling, just going through it that way. It kind of feels like these books are Neil Adams doing that, but they're so weird that there has to be a level of intent to what they're doing.
It is a mystery. It is a mystery and a conundrum. But there's some kind of weird enjoyment I get out of reading this stuff.
Well, the thing that I always say, Matt, is never forget that that Neil Adams was the artist of The Demon's Head and the writer of Skate Man.
Skate Man, another baffling comic book. Okay, let's talk next about Grayson number 17. This is Tim Seeley and Tom King's swan song on the title.
Grayson, as I think we all know if we've been paying attention, Grayson is going away when DC Rebirth hits for whatever we get out of Rebirth. It doesn't look like Grayson will be a part of it. I think Nightwing was announced, but no creative team, unfortunately. So this is Tim Seeley and Tom King's last issue, but it doesn't at all feel like a last issue. They are basically in the middle of a story, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. And in fact, I talked to the two guys who are coming on to write 18, 19, and 20, Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, and they had nothing but great things to say about Grayson as a book, about Tim and Tom as writers. So it's not like, I don't think it's a matter of them just kind of interrupting. It's just that I don't know what the situation is, but they're going out with what might be one of the weirdest exit issues I've ever read in a way that doesn't make it bad. Like, it's a super fun issue. And I genuinely feel like the next, you know, from what I've talked about with those guys in a very brief interview that I did today, that the next few issues are also going to be really fun. It's just very strange for this story to kind of have started and for this issue to involve, you know, Frankenstein and Dow from Alan Moore's Wildcats and Grifter and Maxwell Lord and Checkmate. And then just like, you know, okay, bye. Bye, Tim Seeley. Bye, Tom King. It's a weird way for their run on this book to end.
Yeah, it's abrupt, but you know, that happens sometimes. And yeah. I don't think it takes away anything. It certainly doesn't take away anything from the larger run.
No, not at all. And as we have gone over in this show, like Grayson's my fave. Like, it's my favorite DC book right now. And that's including stuff like Gotham Academy, like Midnighter, like Snyder and Capullo's Batman, to be honest, which is a Batman run that I love and that you and I have flipped out about.
Yeah.
Like, Grayson is this like weird, all new island of weirdness that is a great use of the character. This being the ending feels weird, but that doesn't make it bad.
All right, we're going to wrap up by talking about Squirrel Girl number 5, which is the end of this opening story arc that also, you know, I guess the through line of these three comics is strangeness. Just weirdness. And in one case, it's baffling. And then in the other two cases, it's absolutely delightful. In Grayson, it's absolutely delightful. And in Squirrel Girl, it is so fun. This is a story where Squirrel Girl goes back in time to the 1960s to fight Dr. Doom, who has also gone back in time. There's also a classmate of hers who has a ray gun that is sending not just himself back in time, but various objects. So there's an explanation of that. There are two Squirrel Girls running around. The Squirrel Girl that we know at the age she is now, and then a Squirrel Girl who is considerably older. and they are teaming up to fight Dr. Doom. There's so much great character stuff in here. There are so many gags that are really funny and that you can miss the first time through that you can, you know, go back and check out the next time because there's so much going on a page. There's like so much kind of goofy Dr. Doom stuff, which one of my favorite kinds of Marvel stories. I mean, Dr. Doom stories are some of my favorite kinds of Marvel
stories. Yeah, I was going to say.
But one of my favorite kinds of Marvel stories is one where Dr. Doom is kind of out of his element, where he has to deal with characters who are not serious all the time, who confront him with silliness, and then he has to confront and comment on that silliness. And that is what this story has been throughout. And then Squirrel Girl ends up beating him. I don't think I'm spoiling anything with that because she is unbeatable.
It is the title of the book.
She ends up beating him with the silliest plan. It is absolutely ludicrous, ridiculous, and hilarious. So if you're not reading Squirrel Girl, I don't know what to tell you, because we've been talking it up on this show for a while. But if you're not, just go back and start with this number one issue and read this opening arc with Dr. Doom, because it is absolutely fantastic. That's it for our comic segment. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to get into our interview with Daniel Kibblesmith and Elliot Ray Hall. We're going to be talking to them about The Doorman.
Joining us for the program this week, we are very excited to have not one, but two special guests. You will know them as the co-writers of The Doorman out from Heavy Metal. That's right. It's a heavy metal show tonight, everybody. Daniel Kibblesmith and Elliot Ray Hall, welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Podcast, this is the sound of my voice, listeners. I'm Elliot.
Oh, right. That makes sense. I'm Daniel.
I think the first thing we have to talk about is the heavy metal movie, because I made a reference to it before we started recording.
Oh,
And it seems that we've got some... I mean, look, we are an anti-gatekeeping show. We like to create a welcoming environment for fans of all experience levels. But it seems like you guys are a couple of fake heavy metal guys. That's all I'm saying.
Elliot,
go ahead. Defend this position.
I have seen the heavy metal movie at least four times. Too many times as a young boy. I'm 28. This is pre-internet times, so I used it to look at animated ladies. And then I grew up a little bit out of that, and then I watched it regularly as an adult, and it is crazy insane and weird, but the music is super rad, and then, yeah. So, I'm not a metalhead, though. I don't have any tattoos, and I certainly don't fit in a metal bar, if that makes any help.
Let's test that theory, Elliot. When you're in Chicago for C2E2, I know a place that I also am afraid to go into.
Let's be afraid together.
All right. Well, okay, so Elliot's seen the heavy metal movie enough times for both of us. That's the tack I'm going to take.
You would say that the total number of times the two of you have seen the heavy metal movie is also the number of times Elliot has seen the heavy metal movie. That's exactly what I'm hearing.
Yes, as a duo, we have seen the heavy metal movie.
Together, what I see is what Daniel sees, because we're that close at this point.
I think they're buying it.
Yes, they for sure are.
Listen,
and
guys,
to be fair, Daniel doesn't need to see that movie because it's fucking insane.
Yeah, also, Daniel saw Wizards and American Pop and like a whole bunch of other nonsense that I barely remember, even though I did see it. So I don't know that the heavy metal movie would endure in my consciousness as an adult. Now that I know there are animated ladies in it, I wish that I had seen it on VHS, on video system.
Yeah, they are not well. Yeah, I'm not going to get into that, but I will pose this question to you, Matt and Chris. Would you not say it's more metal for him not to have seen the heavy metal movie because that's in itself an act of rebellion? What?
I'm more punk rock.
Yeah, that's.
But there is no weird movie called punk rock.
Here's the true question, guys. Yes. Let's cut through all this bullshit. Okay.
Whoa!
Explicit tag.
And get to the real stuff.
Let's do it.
When's the doorman gonna put on his, chainmetal corset and ride a dragon?
I'm not gonna give away. I don't want to show you how the sausage is made. You know what I mean?
It's in issue 5 where they ride a dragon to a sausage making factory.
Yep. Daniel, I thought we had agreed on no spoilers, but cat's out of the bag.
No, we've got the spoiler tag on this episode.
Oh, that's right.
Honestly, having read the first issue, I would not be surprised if that is what happened at number 5.
It's not out of the question, right?
It's like it is totally like I can totally see it. I can see the page in my head.
I mean, it's a big universe. We want to keep everything. We want to keep everything on the table. I do feel bad that I haven't seen the heavy metal movie. Like, I like work by artists who grew out of heavy metal, but I can't remember. Maybe as a child, like flipping through a copy of heavy metal magazine, because I was always a comics guy, and heavy metal was too scary. I wanted to read about superheroes I was familiar with. And now that they're a comics imprint, it's something that, is more on my radar.
Well, let me ask you a question, Daniel Kibblesmith. How old are you?
I'm 32.
You are 30? Oh, great. So you're younger than me. That's awesome. That's super cool. That's super great.
Yeah, everybody likes hearing that.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with it. I'm absolutely fine with it. Matt, can you hang on 1 second? I will be right back.
Yeah, I'll ask a question while you're...
Okay.
If we hear a gunshot in the background, somebody better call the cops.
Okay. Guys, let me ask this. How did you guys get hooked up with heavy metal? Because heavy metal is a very different animal now than it was... I guess the magazine's still coming out, right? But it is evolving into a comics publisher, and Grant Morrison is their editor in chief now. So how did you guys kind of fall in with heavy metal? Because this is a sci-fi book; it falls into their milieu, so to speak.
Nice word.
I love bilingual Matt Wilson, by the way.
I am busting out the poorly pronounced French tonight. No, there aren't a lot of buxom women riding dragons, which is the quintessential heavy metal image, but it does fit into the genre. So I'd be interested to know how you guys got kind of hooked up with the publisher.
Sure. Well, I mean, just and a quick aside about our book, heavy metal is an evolving company. And yeah, they definitely had the metal bikinis back in the day, but through the work that Daniel and I are doing, and the work from Hoax Hunters and Donnie Cates's Interceptor, we're definitely trying. The creators on the comics line are definitely trying to steer the ship into a more inclusive readership for all people that would enjoy it. Including women. Yeah. So that's something we're pretty proud of, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of cool how, everything that you just said, Matt, like their purview is pretty broad. So I think there's different ways that you can kind of it's a Venn diagram of everything that you just mentioned. And we have a book with a lot of like spacefaring and a lot of gore in it, and violence and lasers punching holes through people's heads. But at the same time, like when we were, designing our lead female character, it was important to us that she dress and look like a normal woman. And if there are other books in the heavy metal line that maybe want to be sexier and less violent, or, you know, sexier and more violent, it's a pretty big tent. I think the common denominator is just sort of the genre trappings, like sci-fi fantasy and general craziness. So sure. they've been pretty cool about letting us fit in the way that works for like our styles and our story.
So did you guys?
And I have to say, like, as a reader, the first issue of Doorman, you know, feels less like, I think, the imagery that comes to mind when, you know, if you were 13 and you picked up Heavy Metal on VHS from Blockbuster on a Friday afternoon. It feels less like those memories, and honestly, it feels like more something that I think if people are fans of Douglas Adams, that they should definitely be jumping on.
That's a gigantic compliment. I am a huge fan of Hitchhiker's Guide, and there's certainly a lot of influence, I think, subconsciously in this book, too.
In terms of getting hooked up with heavy metal, one of the reasons that I love working with Elliot is that I have a pretty chained to the desk sort of day job, and Elliot has a bigger footprint in comics and goes to cons and makes connections, and we get to team up, and he's really good at forming relationships with people that I'm not able to get a lot of FaceTime with.
I appreciate that, Daniel, but everyone likes Daniel more than me. But
that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that's what I would say. But yeah, no, we were initially got hooked up with my the former marketing guru over at Dark Horse, Jeremy Adkins. Really, if he's listening to this, really stellar guy too. Love him to death. And he got out of the comics game, and then he got back into the comics game at Heavy Metal. I was able to go to Emerald City last year. Heavy Metal just started sort of its avenue into comics. They had a panel. Jeremy introduced us to Jeff Krelitz. Jeff is the guy of guys over there. And after a few conversations, here we are.
We've talked a little bit about Doorman, and we've talked about the feeling of it, and we've talked about how it's a sci-fi book, but we haven't actually talked about the premise of the book. So if you would like to describe it for our listeners.
This is always the hardest part for me because I always want to describe it in every single sentence, which ends up being too long. So I'm going to actually let Daniel's brain of copy editing see if he can make a better justification, because I'll end up sounding a little much like Stan Lee, and that's not fun for anybody.
Sure, he's a notorious failure.
Yeah, but, for sure.
Okay, so the premise of the Doorman is that on every civilized planet, there is an ancient door, which is your standard Stargate wormhole nexus that can take you to any other door on any other planet. So any place where life evolved, there are these ancient doors that were put there that let you teleport to other planets, and nobody knows who built them or why, but they're operated by an ancient race of door men. And that's where the sort of design and aesthetic of the book starts coming in, because the whole thing is also sort of this Art Deco riff, love story to kind of the bygone service era, where you'd have doormen and cigarette girls and restroom attendants and all of these kinds of people who are defined by being on the sidelines. So our main character is an elderly doorman who's one day from retirement, and instead of the retirement party committee, an assassin shows up on his door doorstep. And the mystery of the book becomes, you know, who is killing off all of the doormen, these seemingly unimportant people, and it leads to a bigger conspiracy about what these doors are that lets him team up with a sort of a kooky Agent Mulder type detective who's the only person who gives a shit about doormen, and they go on space adventures together.
You say there's a mystery of who's killing the doorman, but it is revealed on page 10.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mystery.
It's sort of revealed on page one.
Yeah.
I think the page one is a splash page of our hero with a gun to his head. So there's motives and bigger machinations that we get to eventually. But yeah, it's more of a tantalizing baby mystery, and then in the first issue, you have a pretty clear idea of who the bad guy is.
Oh, tantalizing baby mystery is definitely an episode title possibility.
It's in the running.
That might actually be better than riding a dragon to the sausage factory, which is what I have written down.
So one thing that this first issue does is really just kind of toss the reader into the action. Like you said, there's the guy with the gun to the doorman's head is on page one. And as a result, you have to learn about the doorman and all the other doormen in context as things move along. And there are certain things that, like traits about our lead doorman, that come up in the dialogue and you learn more about him. But like, there's not like there's no doorman origin story here, which I think is nice, but also like led me to have some questions. Like, this is a guy who is very obsessed with rules, and the whole doorman organization seems to be. They do not ever leave their post. And there's one line of dialogue that makes it sound like he has, like, through an entire career of being a doorman, he has talked to no one. Like, he has sat at the door and talked to no one. Is that something you guys are going to explore a lot more in the issues to come? Like, his isolation?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a yes and no. It was important to our Bible that nobody goes to Earth anymore, and there's more conversation about the why of that in coming issues. But yeah, a lot of it is at least because we want the story to move so quickly, and it really is like all sort of present tense action that's happening. Like, we kind of take him out of the throw him out of the frying pan and into the fire, and he just sort of stays in the fire for everything that we've written so far. But I thought it was important that once we figured out that detail, I think Elliot and I both wanted it to sort of inform his melancholy, and also just the fact that he might be a little crazy. Like the sort of de facto solitary confinement that he's had over the years. You know, as a result of that, he sort of has watched his own world kind of go by, like through television and on the sidelines. And now that he's free of it, he doesn't even get to rejoin society. He's just out in the universe, perpetually fish out of water.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's certainly something that we want to like play with more and kind of fully explain.
Exactly what Daniel's saying. And then, like, you know, other things on top of that. Like, you know, part of the reason why you don't see a huge origin story is because of his job. Like, he's a door guy. It's not the most interesting thing to show 30 years of a guy opening and closing a door. And that's part of the reason why we wanted to keep it in the action. And part of the crux of his character is because of the fact that he's had a boring 30 or 40 years. You know, for me, and I think for Daniel, this book is, yes, it's funny, and yes, it's got a lot of things going, but this
and
book
yes,
is...
And yes, it's funny, and yes, it's and got yes, a lot of things going.
I'm and such yes, a good sailor. And yes, I am, you know, cool and stuff. But this whole book is about trying to get your dignity back, you know, in life. And like a lot, you know, a lot of life is sort of trying to feel important or have some sort of sense of accomplishment. And like going back to what Daniel said about like the bygone era thing, like take a look at like, you know, doormen of like the 1920s Hilton. Like, boy, they had access to all of these stars and all these riches and the greatest things in the world they had access to, but they were never allowed to participate in it. And like, here you have a character who has the ability to access all of the universe and travel anywhere he wants to, but he can't because his job won't let him. And I think that's really cool in terms of an idea. And it's a really weird thing for a character to have. Like, he's not allowed to participate in happiness. And not only that, he hasn't had anybody to talk to because nobody wants to go to Earth because it's dumb. And
I'm laughing, hella but dumb. I helped with this idea.
Yeah. And so now he's feel like he's wasted his life. And he's just, you know, at a certain point he evolves from reluctant hero to a guy who's just trying to figure out who he is, I think.
He's got to start living.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for saying that in one sentence rather than 20.
It's because I stole it from the Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that's a good one. Have you guys seen that movie? That's a good movie.
You know, throughout,
I had the choice between running that or heavy metal, and I made my choice.
You know, the entire time I was reading The Doorman Number One, I was like, man, this is a lot like The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, we've been getting that a lot. I think it's the praying mantis alien with the blue bullet hole through his face.
Love it. Dave. Gotta love Dave.
Dave, the mantis doorman that they find on the other planet already murdered. That's what's getting us most of the Shawshank comparisons.
I was just thinking, man, Darabont's got a case, you know?
Hey, you can come knocking on our door anytime.
Now, Matt, you hit it on at this a little bit, but there is so much information and so much setup that's kind of required in this book because you do have this weird premise of interdimensional stargates, and it's also kind of a murder mystery, and it's also kind of an Art Deco thing. Like, there's a lot going on in it. But so much of that information is conveyed to the reader in incredibly elegant ways. You have, what, like a paragraph? Like five sentences on the inside front cover? And I didn't even read those before I sat down to read the actual comic. And it moves so quickly, and so much information is carried across while there are action scenes going on and while people are just having conversations. And then you get to the point where someone is having, like it's Carlisle Moongale, who is this alien mega rich guy. And he's having a conversation with someone who's interviewing him over the phone. And you only get his half of the conversation. And there's so much information in half that conversation, and it's so elegantly done, and it made me mad.
thank you. Sorry.
Listen, I'm writing the X-Men right now, and everybody knows who the X-Men are, and I still feel like I have to put 20 captions in there to explain everything.
Yeah, but that's
and you guys just come along and introduce this whole new concept in this beautifully elegant way.
I mean, that is hugely flattering. And in fairness to Chris Sims, long before you got there, they thought they had to explain the X-Men with a million captions at every opportunity.
Yeah.
The X-Men are – I'm probably the first person to point this out. The X-Men can be confusing.
I've never heard that. I don't get it. I don't understand why anyone would say it.
We really appreciate that. I think it's sort of like I want to take as much credit as us as writers for like figuring out how to do that, but it also might it's partially a byproduct of just how much we wanted to do. I think it forces us when we sit down to sort of treat scenes. I don't know about you, Elliot, but sometimes. Because what we do sometimes is like Elliot will do a pass and then he'll kick it to me, or we'll do partial passes and pick up a script from the other person. So I'll get something where I see exactly where it has to go, but it's not there yet, and it kind of becomes that, you know, video game puzzle of us educating each other on how to make a scene work. So I think there's a lot of problem solving, like almost writing ourselves into corners, but not as joyless. I would want to say like the kind of story that necessitates like us being clever every once in a while, if we can.
I agree with Daniel also, and not for nothing. And this is the part where Daniel and I both need to stop and say a lot of this is due to the brilliant, and I'm going to say the word brilliant, creativity that our artist and fellow collaborator Kendall Good has brought to the table, because that guy, he gets it. He totally gets the pace and his acting on the characters is phenomenal. And like, if we want something to be funny, he's going to manipulate it to be funny. And that helps so much more in comics if the artist has a grasp of what humor is. And he's able to drive points home very succinctly with his art and keep that ball rolling. So even if we do occasionally get description heavy in, let's say, a word balloon or a conversation, it doesn't seem that way because Kendall makes it okay with how he lays out the page, how you read the page, and how the characters in the page looks.
Yeah, Kendall Good is a beautiful genius. So much storytelling lifting is done with him, like just giving somebody the right eyebrows, or laying out the panels in some incredibly beautiful order that like I never would have been able to conceive of when we deliver the script to him.
Well, yeah. One thing that I picked up on when from his art while I was reading was just that. And I think you guys have to do this in the writing too. You've got to find that middle ground where, you know, the reader takes this seriously as a story, but also knows that it's okay to laugh at the jokes, at the comedy, at the absurdity of the whole thing. And one thing that I noted, like Kendall does really well, is he can make the characters have funny expressions without it looking like they're mugging, you know?
Yes.
And he's
hamming it up.
Yeah, and he can put a lot on the page without it looking busy. But there's lots of scenes in that sort of almost like Transmetropolitan style where there's so much stuff in the background to look at that can be so entertaining just to like sit there and look at the page and look at all those. Some of them are gags. Some of them are just kind of scenery, like interesting future scenery. Did you guys put a lot of that background stuff in the script, or is that all Kendall?
It's both, you know, like we will incorporate ideas. Like, one of my favorite things that Daniel's ever come up with, and I think it's the funniest shit on the planet, is pizza holes. And
Scarpelli's pizza holes.
Scarpelli's pizza holes. It's so funny. It's like this fake pizza thing, and like we incorporated that, and like we'll throw in suggestions, but at the end of like every sort of like panel description that has like some of those jokes in them, yeah, we'll have a bunch of descriptions and a bunch of suggestions, but then we also leave it open and be like, hey, and if you think of anything funny or you want to add anything in here, like by all means, like,
yeah, it's such a, like, I'm really, the Transmet comparison I hadn't thought of, but one thing that we did talk a lot about was Futurama and Rick and Morty and other things that have been successful in this genre that are big influences on us. And without fail, those are heavily Easter egg laden shows, and they come up with designs that can be touched upon later, like a background character is, you know, by necessity kind of elaborate and designy. So, you know, you didn't just make an extra for a panel. You made a new race that if it sparks something in the three of us, we could bring those guys back and do something cool with them. So we've definitely, like, been sneaking in Easter eggs and in-jokes and stuff. But invariably, the last, like Elliot was saying, like, the last sentence of all those panel descriptions is, you know, go nuts. Do this thing that you're great at.
This series is a limited series, correct? It's how many issues is it?
We're gonna be doing four for now. You know, okay. I mean, this one particular story that you're seeing with Carlisle Moongale and the sort of impetus of all of this is a four issue mini.
Okay, so it sounds like one you have plans for, or you leave the door open to.
Oh, no.
I'm clapping. Not really, because it'll mess up Skype.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, no, I'm into it.
But, you know, you guys leave the possibility for future stories, future miniseries, whatever, in the coming months, years, etc. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're sort of treating it as I sort of like the BBC show mentality, where we want to do a season of this that can be completely effective as a self-contained four-part story, but obviously do enough world building and probably some kind of cliffhanger to keep everybody, including us, excited about the idea of coming back as soon as possible. I think our only fear is the sort of perennial fear of any comic book writer is that Kendall will get too famous and busy before we can return to it. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've laid so much groundwork, and I don't think we've touched half of what we wrote down in terms of our universe Bible for the Doorman.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that was the thing I was going to ask about when I was talking about how much information you get across in such a short amount of time. Like, how in depth is your Bible for this series?
It's kind of like a Mad Hatter's journal at this point. you know, like,
it's a lot of notes. It's also a lot of stuff that only exists as conversation. It's stuff that, like, we know to be true, but I think if I had to go find it as a Google Doc, it might not actually be written down.
Yeah, which is a problem, by the way.
Yes, work on that. Stuff
down. We call each other, we text each other, we email each other. I try to keep it as respectful as possible because Daniel is off making the Holly Weirdos laugh. But
one of those New York City Holly Weirdos.
You know, that's what, you know, I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah, we do that. And then, you know, before this entire process started, before you even started doing pages, God, we must have had at least six hours of phone calls in total dedicated to what the fuck are we going to talk about, you know?
Yeah, it was a lot of marathon phoners where we were getting down all the basics and kind of frantically taking separate Google Docs. But not a bad, you know, especially for writers who are loose and maybe don't have that rigorous of a schedule or that like disciplined of a process. I do kind of recommend it, actually. If you're not the kind of person who sits down and gets your 12 pages every day, if you maybe do bursts, Elliot and I, just basically laid a lot of agreed upon groundwork. And then because he's got other books that he's working on and I have a daily TV schedule, whenever we were ready to come back to it, there was never any ambiguity about where it was headed.
Can I make a request of you guys?
Yeah.
Lobby Heavy Metal. I'm making a request of the listeners also. Lobby Heavy Metal. Start up a petition, change.org, right now, so that we can have one more issue in this miniseries of The Doorman, make it a zero or a one-half issue, that is strictly just a guide to how one gets the job of a doorman. Because the question that I was continually asking as I was reading this issue was, how did he get this job? Like, did he get a job in the building? And then they were just like, yeah, you watch this door. And then, like, a hand reached through and gave him a handbook? Or... Like
that's true.
So that's written.
It is written, and we'll talk about it in the series. There is, if you notice on the second or third page,
there's a little Easter egg, and you can see a very it doesn't reveal very much, but it's the beginning of hinting at a larger world. There's a photograph, right, Elliot?
Yes, there's a photograph of a young Henry Clay Waters, and to our dear listeners, that is our current doorman and one of the protagonists of the story. And he's with a elderly-looking alien, and they're both in porter's clothing together. The doormen are called porters. That porters is their eloquent term.
It's colloquial.
You know, it's very much sort of a Green Lantern situation. Said no one.
Well, listen, I was busy opening up that page and doing a CSI style zoom in enhance.
Sure.
A real good look at this background Easter egg.
Guys, can we talk about a comic that isn't the Doorman for 1 second? Because as long as the Green Lantern's origin story came up, I just need to ask another person this. Who told Hal Jordan to put on a mask?
I mean, no.
The other guy's not wearing a mask, right?
He's just Adam Sir does not wear a mask, but many of the other Green Lanterns do.
They do.
I mean, I guess why do they need to wear masks?
It out on his own. I understand that it is as much a trope as a cape. Another thing that no sane person would put on.
Well, hang on. Now you're getting into some spicy territory with this theory, Kibblesmith.
Capes are super cool, Daniel. Look,
unless you're me at the prom, I don't know why you would wear a cape.
Oh no!
What if you wanted to strike fear into the hearts of criminals and you saw an omen? What then? That's a good reason to wear a cape.
That's right, because it would help you resemble a bat, which you promised your father you would become.
Exactly, that which you promised a father who had been dead for 20 years that you would do.
That's right. Capes and masks, that's what you put on after a dead person kind of
that's right.
Hints at it. I just don't understand why comics can't make sense like ours. You're a space doorman.
So
I decided to go do some research here to try to like see if there's any rhyme or reason to which Green Lanterns wear masks and which do not. And there is not. Like some human Green Lanterns wear masks, others do not. Some alien Green Lanterns wear masks, others do not.
Well, listen, Jon Stewart very famously decided on panel not to wear a mask or gloves.
I'm going to say this, guys. Don't we all wear a mask?
Okay.
here's my theory. Here's my no prize winning explanation for this. It's an optional part of the uniform.
That's it. That's sure. Got to be it. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, is that they're available, and like Jon Stewart and Guy Gardner have theirs in like a locker.
Like in the Army or some other organization where there are uniforms, there is the standard uniform, and then there are various things that you can optionally wear with that uniform, like a hat of some kind.
Matt, if I may borrow.
Is that domino masks are for Green Lanterns what mustaches are for cops.
Oh, there we go.
They're the mustache of the eyes.
They're the mustache of the eyes and the mustache of space.
I thought those were eyebrows. Man, am I an idiot.
Yeah, that cracks it wide open, Chris. I formally withdraw any question I have about the Green Lantern mask.
Do you have any, like, while you're here, I mean, do you have any other questions about Green Lantern or DC Comics in general that we can help with?
No, weirdly, that was the only one.
Just that one.
It's the only thing that ever bothered me. Everything else went down smooth.
Oh, okay. You're
all
right. That is the only thing that doesn't make sense.
The only weird thing about DC Comics.
Now that we have finished our super popular, mega hot new segment, Green Lantern Corner.
Oh, I love it.
It's time.
I like that because you can spell it like CORPSNER.
Oh, man.
Now we have to do it. Now we have to do it every week.
Show, Matt. This is 2016's hottest new podcast segment.
You guys should call it the Green Lantern Room, right? The Green Room. All right, I'm sorry. I'll stop.
It's time to kick it over to our listeners on Twitter who have some questions.
That's right, Matt. And if people want to get in on the questions that we ask to our interviewees each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how can they go about that?
Well, first of all, you need to watch the death of a Green Lantern of your sector and then have that Green Lantern give you his or her power ring so that you become the new Green Lantern of that sector. Get your uniform, which is formed by the light from your ring, and then choose, simply as a fashion choice, whether or not that costume includes a domino mask, or if you're Kyle Rayner, some kind of strange plastic contraption that's glued to your face. Then, go sign up for an account on Twitter.com. Follow me, the Matt D. Wilson, or Chris, the ISB. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And one of us will put out the call for questions for our guests. That's your opportunity to ask a question, just like the questions you're about to hear, for Elliot and Daniel. And the first one we have is a classic from Not Mandalorian, which is someone you might remember from last week's show.
That's right. I got to say, no, Matt, is this at Not Mandalorian or is this at Not _ Mandalorian? Because we were followed by both after last week's show.
This is Not Mandalorian, all one word.
Okay.
Not Mandalorian is bringing this question back. Daniel and Elliot, what is your favorite New Jack Swing song?
Ooh, classic.
What?
Yeah, I don't understand that sentence.
New Jack Swing is a genre of music from the mid-90s, popularized by groups such as Belle Biv DeVoe, Another Bag Creation.
Cherry Poppin' Daddies and shit?
No, that's the Swing Revival.
New Jack Swing right now.
Elliot, I'm going to yell at you as though I wasn't also about to ask that.
Okay. Yeah.
New Jack Swing is like mid-90s R&B.
Boys to Men.
Make-out music.
Yes. If you don't have a favorite New Jack Swing song, it is almost certainly Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe.
Well, hey, then let's go with that one.
The Kiss from a Rose doesn't fall into this, does it?
I would say Kiss from a Rose is not New Jack Swing. I would say that is more traditional R&B.
That's like ballad territory.
I'm going to go with Chris's answer.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with the song Motown Philly, that would also be considered New Jack Swing.
No, sure. I'm not good at music in general, and I think this is just a genre where I wasn't listening to anything yet.
All right, listen, what I want you to do is we'll finish out the interview, and this is fine, but what I want you to do is promise me that as soon as we end this Skype call, you will go to YouTube and type in the words Motown Philly, that's Philly like Philadelphia, and you will listen to the song.
I will absolutely do that, also because I love mixing city metaphors.
This is one that might be a little easier for you guys. This was from Austin Wilden. WC_WIT on Twitter. Austin wants to know, what's the most metal thing about the doorman?
I have my answer for this.
Let's go with Daniel's answer first.
Okay, so the smart guy answer is that our main character has been sort of living in solitary confinement for 30, 40 years, and we haven't really dealt with the consequences of that yet. But I'm not a smart guy. So my answer is the panel where Detective Flower, our other protagonist, shoots her bubble gun at one of the bad guys, and the beam explodes his head and bounces off and explodes the head of an adjacent bad guy.
I like that answer. I would also say there is a scene in this book where I'm not going to tell you exactly what's happening, but it turns into what can only be described as an alien bloodbath, and I think that's pretty metal. Or also, I think our ending is pretty metal too.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know what? It's the last page.
All right, then that means you got to read all four issues to. Or are you talking about the last page of issue
last
one?
Last page of the first issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
guys, you should have said yes, read all four issues. I know you're a little new at this, but.
Yeah, it's still that.
Well, also, the doorman is very close to retirement, right?
Yeah, he's the classic one day from retirement character.
Would you say he's 2 minutes to retirement.
I would now. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The genre of music I am slightly more familiar with.
There you go. Well, I'm glad we established that. Daniel Kibblesmith, Elliot Ray Hall, it has been such a pleasure having you on War Rocket Ajax. Before we wrap up, please let all our listeners know all the different places that they can find you on the internet.
Sure. I am Snack Situation Fan 69 at yahoo.com. My last name, Kibblesmith, is me on all social media, so I'm very easy to find.
Yep, I'm Elliot Rahal, E-L-I-O-T-R-A-H-A-L. I'm on, you know, Twitters and Instagrams and whatevers.
Can we start a new Twitter account based on something says in every episode of War Rocket Ajax starting the last week? So somebody go create Snack Situation Fan 69 right now.
I love
please.
It.
That might be me. I might just do it.
Yes, please do.
That sounds like a great blog, by the way, Daniel.
Oh, I mean, it's Elliot, are you not familiar with the hottest segment in podcasting for 2015 and 16?
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm sorry. Yes, I totally am.
It has a brand new theme song that you guys should go listen to. Go watch the video of that on YouTube, which doesn't exist.
Did we answer this question for real? Are we doing our duty as podcast guests?
Yes, you've answered.
Okay, just making sure. I genuinely lost track.
Same here, buddy. Same here.
Our guests for this week's show have been Daniel Kibblesmith and Elliot Rahal. The book is Doorman, out from Heavy Metal. Check it out. Seriously, I'm not kidding when I say that it has the feeling of something like Hitchhiker's Guide. If that is your kind of sci-fi, you will like this first issue a lot. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, really a pleasure.
Dun, 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 dun.
Thanks again to Daniel and Elliot. Definitely check out those comics. Also, I don't think Daniel ever mentioned it, but watch the Stephen Colbert Show, because he's a writer on that.
That's right. Look,
probably don't need to be told that, but just in case.
He didn't want to, you know, play that up too much. He's promoting his comic. But yes, Daniel is a writer on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, so watch that show. Okay, now it is time, Chris, for us to take some questions from our listeners. Typically, we take these questions from our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast@tumblr.com. But this time, I'm actually digging up a couple questions from emails.
Ooh.
And the first of them that I have here is from Ross May. Ross May, who is a really great comic artist in his own right. You should check out all his stuff.
And a very, very good dude. Very good dude, Ross
Absolutely.
May.
Ross asks us this question. He's kind of putting us on the spot here, okay?
Oh, okay.
He says, "Hi, Matt and Chris. You guys spend a lot of your time ranking things." That is,
we do. A curious amount, in fact.
Incontrovertibly true. "We know Chris's favorite comic characters, and I understand Matt's is Spider-Man. What are, say, your top three non-comic characters?" That is a wide array of characters to choose from.
So, like, fictional characters, but not comics characters.
That is his premise, yes.
Okay, interesting. We got to do a top three?
Top three is what he's wanting. Here's what I might suggest, because this is – I think we need some time to think about this.
Oh, I don't. I can go right now.
All right, go right now then. Hit me.
Okay. I would say probably – does Adam West Batman count?
He's a comic character.
Okay, fine. I would say Santa Claus, number one, with a bullet made of mistletoe and holly.
Okay.
Number one, easily. I am, outside of comics, I am a pretty big James Bond guy. Like, in that I don't necessarily like James Bond as much as I like, say, Jughead Jones. But I do have a lot of conversations about James Bond. So there's that. And then Dracula would be if well, Dracula probably counts as a comics character considering how much I like him in comics. But if he doesn't,
I mean, frankly, all three of those characters have appeared in comics.
That's true, but I mean Bond, like not, Bond, clearly not a comics character. Movie Bond is who I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
and Santa Claus, the Christmas character.
Right, I think we could say that characters that did not originate in comics,
yeah,
are probably what we're going for here.
So yeah, I would say probably Santa Claus, Dracula, and again, these are very standard answers. Santa Claus, Dracula, Ash Ketchum. Matt, who would yours be? Or do you need time?
I don't. Well, here, let me try to work through it a little bit.
Okay, I'm with you, buddy. I'm here for you.
I have a real affinity for the trope of the evil old man and the ineffectual scoundrel. Mm-hmm. Those are two of my faves.
Those are good. Those are good ones.
So I tend to really like characters that fall into those categories, which is why my favorite Simpsons character has long been Mr. Burns. And despite the kind of the downfall of the Simpsons over the past, 15 years? It's been a long death. Despite that, I still really like any episode that like focuses on Mr. Burns or has like a lot of good Mr. Burns gags are going to be among my favorites. I don't think it's a coincidence, by the way, that the two episodes that people often say are like the two best ever, which are the monorail episode and Last Exit to Springfield, the strike episode, are also really big Mr. Burns episodes. That may just be me, but I think that's true. Another character that I'm a huge fan of, which is always my go-to when I think of ineffectual scoundrels, is Arnold Rimmer from Red Dwarf, which is a show that I used to watch all the time with my older brother and that I really liked a lot. I still like a lot. And Rimmer has always just appealed to me as that, like, he is such an unrepentant asshole who is also a complete coward, which is like such a vein to mine for amazing amazing comedy. And then for number three is a little tougher because it's such a wide, you know, again, it's every character ever, not just comics. So there's a lot there. I keep coming back to like Big Lebowski characters, and a lot of people would say the dude from the Big Lebowski. I actually think Walter is my favorite character from the Big Lebowski because he is such a beautiful, perfect counterpoint to the dude.
I also pretty great.
I love all his dialogue. Like, he's such an intense guy. And he makes the thing about the Big Lebowski is that the dude is supposed to be laid back. Like, you were told consistently throughout the movie that he is lazy and really relaxed. But the circumstances of the movie make him high strung throughout. Like, Walter makes him high strung. Walter makes him anxious, nervous, and neurotic. Which is like one of the beautiful things about that movie. Like, constantly in the narration of the Big Lebowski, you are told things that are not true. Such as when Sam Elliott tells you at the end, looks like things worked out pretty well for the dude and Walter, when they definitely didn't. They didn't get any money. Their friend died. And the dude lost his car. That is where they end up at the end of that movie. So yeah, those are my three off the top of my head. If given more time to think about it, I might come up with something else. But
I find it interesting that you named specific characters. You named specific characters from singular pieces of media, and mine are all like characters who are vastly open to interpretation.
Yeah.
Like you have three very specific performances, and I have Santa Claus and Dracula.
Yeah, I guess I like to focus in on stuff. I like to obsess over very specific pieces of media.
Yeah, I think that says a lot about the way that we read things. Like, I feel I am, as a reader and as a writer, I'm very concerned with adaptability. You know, like working a character into different situations. You know, that's why, you know, my top five comics characters are the characters they are, because they're characters that you find in all kinds of different situations. Whereas in the years that we've been talking to each other, you do seem to prefer a tighter focus in a lot of ways, which I think it's interesting that comes through in a conversation like this.
Yeah, when I think about it, I don't know if I would really want anybody else much to touch Copernicus Jones. Because in my mind, he's very specifically my version of the character. And I'm not saying I'm not saying that I'm self-righteous or, you know, puffed up enough to think that I'm the only one that gets him or understands that character. But I feel like when I write him into a comic, I'm writing like an actor giving a performance. So he's got a very specific voice, very specific mannerisms, everything in my head. So anyway, one more question. This is from Brendan Casey, who is a line stepper. This is another favorite characters question. This one's very specific. It's, hey guys, which robot on the Satellite of Love is your favorite and why?
I feel like we are going, like, there's no way we have the same answer to this.
All right, what's your answer?
I want you to guess mine and I'll guess yours.
All right. I'll guess that yours is Crow.
I'll guess that yours is Servo.
Okay, you'd be right.
You would also be right.
There you go. Okay, why? Why Crow?
Because Crow is... Weirdly enough, it's because Crow is the ineffective scoundrel.
That is true.
Like, Crow is the more sarcastic one. He's the more, like, schemery of the two of them. And he completely fails every time.
That is true.
And that's his joke. Yeah. Why Servo for you?
I think because Servo, first of all, I just love his little Servo dance. That's a big part of it.
I will say, Servo is the best, one of the best designed robots in fiction.
Yeah, I think design is a big part of it. I think like Servo is the more understated.
Yes.
Of not just between him and Crow, but like of the three who are commenting on the movie, Servo's the one who, like, his riffs are going to be the more, like, the ones that can maybe go over your head or pass you by a little more. Or he might not say them as loudly. He might kind of, like, mumble them. But you can catch them and really, like, it almost feels more rewarding to catch a Servo joke.
I think it's a function. I think a lot of it is a function of voices, because, you know, Trace Ballou and Bill Corbett both had that kind of nasally snarky voice.
Yeah.
Which lent itself to Crow being a nasally snarky, schemery kind of character. Whereas Kevin Murphy's voice for Servo, like, first of all, Servo, if you've ever read the Mystery Science Theater episodes guide, they talk about how fun it is to put Servo in dresses.
Yeah.
Because you can buy, like, dresses for dolls, and because Servo has the, you know, the hover skirt, he has hips, and he has a little chest where the gumball machine is, so dresses fit him very well. So you get a lot of, costumes with Servo, and you get a lot of singing with Servo because Kevin Murphy has that, you know, very distinctive kind of high-pitched singing voice that he uses.
Another thing I really love about Servo is that he'll always – he's the one who makes up lyrics to the theme songs to the movies.
Yes. That's one of his gimmicks. And that, like, I think that comes from Kevin Murphy being prone to bursting out into song.
Which is also something I do. So.
Yeah, you are way more likely to, when we're doing Movie Fighters, to make up lyrics to something. And I'm more likely to just be like, this sucks. I hate it. This is awful.
There you go.
We're revealing a lot here on Rocket Ajax tonight.
That's right. We're revealing our true personalities. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do so at our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can send it to us by email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That email address is also where you can send panel president lists, every story ever lists, and just general comments. So go do that if that's what you would like to do. Go check out our website. That is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that is where you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more positive reviews we get on iTunes, the more we are featured there. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, it's easy. All you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you can find links to everything that I am up to. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. They recently changed the formatting on about.me, so I don't think there's links to everything. But you can find my Twitter, my website, my Tumblr, links to Comixology, so all the important stuff is on there. Please let your local shop know that you would like to be reading X-Men 92 before, let's say, just to choose an arbitrary date out of thin air here. Why don't you do that before the 7th of March? It would be really cool if you would do that before the 7th of March, everybody. Although, let's be honest, if you're listening to this, you've probably done it already, and I appreciate it. Also, we are coming up on Ajax number 300, so if you have suggestions for what you would like to see us do to celebrate that momentous occasion, please write in, warrocketpodcast@gmail. And I think that is all we've got for you this week, everybody. Have a good one.
Yeah! Flash. From this day on, at every breed of mongrel.